Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. So we speak into this atmosphere, and we say, let there be light. All right. I love this series that we're talking about this month. Yes, you can. By the way, I do want to say, those of you that came to the opening of Jim Swilly Studio, you know we did a limited edition of Yes, You Can that many, we actually sold out that day. And I did want you to know, I don't want you to think I was lying to you about limited edition. I've had so many people ask that I did have five more made in a smaller, so your size will never be made again. I did have five more, and two of those sold yesterday. So, but after that, it is limited because I wanted to do it for this month. It was important to me that you heard this message, not just through the words of my mouth, but also through the works of my hands. And so it was really cool. One thing that happened this week, I posted about it. The way it works at Paris and Ponce, all of the vendors there, they sell your stuff. You know, like everything goes through them, so they take a percentage of it, which is fine. But you're supposed to get a check on the 10th and on the 24th. Well, I just hadn't thought about it. I mean, I'm not used to, I just don't think about a paycheck. I don't. I mean, Metron pays me twice a month, and Avery deposits the check, and she texts me because you've got money. I'm like, thank you, Jesus. My favorite kind of text. But I never think, I mean, I just don't think about it. But this week I was thinking, we're going out of town. I probably need to get some money in the bank. And wait, I'm supposed to get a check. So I texted the proprietor. I said, when do you get checks for your stuff? Oh, yeah, that was my check. And they said, you should have gotten one on the 10th. I said, well, I didn't. Where's my money? I said, I was going to make a joke about a song, but I'm not. Anyway, they just hadn't put me in the system yet, so it just got lost. No big deal. They cut the check, and it was fine. But it was kind of cool because it was the first, when they cut the check, I thought, this is the first check that I've just received outright just for my artwork. I mean, we used to sell it at churches now, but that all went to the building program, and I mean, I was always funneling everything into the church. This actually came to me, and it was, I don't know, it was kind of a big deal. It's been since I was in college that I got a check for something that wasn't specifically ministry related, and so that was cool, and meant a lot to me. And I'm actually advertising a lot for Metron, because when people come in, they ask, I've got cards up there, and they ask what that is, and it's so interesting to watch people's body language, because they'll say, is this one of your cards? And it's happened over and over again yesterday. I'll say, well, that's a card for a ministry that I have, and they go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, it's okay, they're there for you to take. It's like it's untouchable. They're not supposed to touch it. But anyway, it's just really cool. This man came in last week who works for UNICEF. UNICEF has a division called Next Generation. And these are like young professionals that really do a lot. They raised like $65,000 for UNICEF last year. And this is the second time they've done this thing called the Atlanta Art Party. And they get artists to contribute their artwork. It's a party, like with a bar and a DJ and everything. It'll be next Sunday night at, it's a French name. It's La Fée Dodo. But Saturday the 29th. What did I say, Friday? Sunday? I meant Saturday. So anyway, I donated a couple of pieces, and it's really cool because they've already got me on their website with my artwork with a bunch of others, and I'm not saying they won't sell. It's not an auction. It's just, you know, people go there to buy the art, and their money goes to UNICEF, which is a great organization. And I told them that we've supported UNICEF, haven't we? I know we've supported CARE. If we haven't done UNICEF, it's definitely on my radar screen. But so if they don't sell, it's not the end of the world, because actually we do like these two pieces, so I wouldn't mind having them back. But it's cool to get to sort of be known as an artist. I mean, this is kind of a new world for me, and I got my packet yesterday, and it's got a badge that you wear. And, you know, instead of having to pay the ticket price, you get in because you have artwork and your stuff's out there with all the other artists, and you're like, what's that? So it's just cool. It's nice to, I mean, I know y'all like my stuff because y'all love me, but for people who have never seen me and don't know me and they like it, that's kind of a whole new paradigm. Like, oh, maybe it's not just people who know me, and but it's like people who actually like the art. I'm not saying you didn't like it. You know what I'm saying. That's why I even said, I said, this is the first time I've made money on a thing. And then I thought, well, now Ernie and Avery bought a big piece that they have in their home, but they're kind of in a different category. I said, I can't, you know, like they think up ways to, you know, to bless me. So that's all good. What's that got to do with Yes You Can? Well, I was saying that because this month has been the whole theme, even about the artwork. And for those of you that bought the limited editions, I don't want you to think I was lying to you. There were five more at a smaller size. You got it? Because the guy that did my prints, he took me to task over it. He said, if you said this is limited edition, you can't do X. I said, I know, but this is just five extra. They're in a smaller, and it's for people who couldn't be there that day. Relax. So that was our conversation. The reason I use the letter U, yes, you can, is every Sunday this month, we've been talking about words that begin with the letter U. And I want to specifically look at one in particular today, and it's the word understanding. This is a beautiful scripture in Isaiah chapter 11. It's a messianic prophecy. It's Isaiah talking about when the Messiah comes. And in verse 1 of chapter 11, he says there will be, he uses the symbolism of a tree that's cut down. And he was talking about the line of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David. It's all the, you know, not the Beatitudes, but the begats, you know, Abraham begat Isaac, Isaac begat Jacob, et cetera, et cetera. But in verse 2 and 3 of chapter 11, he says this really beautiful, Isaiah just had some, assuming he wrote it, it's just some beautiful poetry in this book. And he says in verse 2 or 3, I'm just in the New King James, he says, when he begins to describe it, he says, the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the spirit of wisdom and understanding. It's interesting that he makes a difference between wisdom and understanding. And he says, the spirit of counsel and might, verse 3, the spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears. That's such a powerful concept. If you go by the concept that everything that looks like something, you know, if you say, if it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Not necessarily. I mean, that's true a lot of the time. It's not true all of the time. I mean, a few chapters before this, when he talks, Isaiah prophesies the crucifixion, and he says, when we beheld him, there was no form nor comeliness that we should desire him, that he was, we considered him smitten of God. In other words, those of you that are post-Calvary, you see it as a beautiful thing. We just saw it as a criminal that was getting his due, and we didn't see any good in it. And still, I remember years ago I was in Jerusalem doing a thing for the Global Peace Festival, and I was working with imams and rabbis. It's the most ecumenical group I've ever been a part of, and very... Orthodox. I was going to say fundamentalist. Or very Orthodox rabbi and I were just talking. He was amazed. He said, I can't believe that you and your wife Debbie was with me. He said, I can't believe that when you go to one of these functions and we ask you to pray, you just start praying. He said, I've never seen anybody do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, we have to read every prayer because we believe there's a specific way the words are put in order and that it makes something happen in the heavenlies. I said, well, I'm not totally against that concept. I do believe in written words. I just think some things are spontaneous because the word is written on your heart. He'd never even heard of that concept before. But in that setting, we were able to talk about a lot of things without arguing. And he said, the reason we don't believe Jesus is the Messiah is Isaiah prophesied that when the Messiah came, that the lion would lay down with the lamb and that it would usher in this era of peace that we haven't seen. And I said, well, fair enough. I mean, I can see why if you were looking at Jesus through that lens, I could see why you would see it that way. My days of arguing with people, sweet Jesus. I used to stand at the door and argue with Jehovah's Witnesses that came to my door on a Saturday morning, not no mo. Of course, now you can't get through my concierge. You couldn't come. But back in the days when I had a regular front door, now, in recent years, somebody comes to my door, I'm like, hey, kudos to you guys. It's 102 degrees outside. I'm impressed that you believe, as I don't believe it, but I'm impressed that y'all believe it that much. I mean, that's amazing. I told you what I used to tell the Jehovah's Witnesses back in the day when I used to do a lot of street preaching. I'd always be out there with Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, and especially on hot days, we'd all take a break and, you know, talk to each other. And I remember I used to ask I used to call them the JWs, but that sounds irreverent, the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'd say, let me ask you something. Do you guys believe you're part of the 144,000 that's going to be saved? Oh, no. Really? And you're out here today doing this work? I mean, I'm out here too, but I believe I'm in. I mean, if I thought I wasn't part of the number and you asked me to spend the day out here sweating on the street and getting door slammed in my face, I'd be like, oh, hell no. Furthermore, if there's only 144,000 slots, I don't want them filled. I mean, I might bump my own self out of there. I might say there's only 144,000 slots. Shut up. Don't tell anybody else because there might not be room for us. I think I converted some of them out of it because they're like, I never thought of it that way. But if you're a Jehovah's Witness, don't write me. I'm just saying, when we were talking about these things, I said, I can understand why you see Jesus the way that you see him. I mean, I was raised predisposed to love Jesus. I mean, in my earliest recollection was in a Sunday school class singing Jesus Loves the Little Children. I mean, last night I called my mom to ask her about something. I said, what are you doing? And she's kind of getting me caught up on what's going on with them health-wise. I said, are you studying your Sunday school lesson? And we both laughed. I said, because you did for a lot of years. She said, I haven't thought of that phrase and song. Because that's what you used to do on Saturday night. You studied your Sunday school lesson because you went to Sunday school on Sunday morning. And, you know, we're in a very different world now. But the word understanding, I think it's so interesting that Isaiah, when he prophesies the Messiah, he says there's a difference between wisdom and understanding. There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is knowing a lot of facts. Wisdom is, how do I use those facts? Understanding is, why are there even facts in the first place? Understanding is a whole other dimension. And if I'm going to say, yes, you can, I'm going to have to say, the only way you can get through this life is to understand what in the world's going on. Let me show you a definition of the word understand. There's a lot of definitions for it, but I liked this one. It says, it's the power of comprehending, especially the capacity to apprehend general relations of particulars, the power to make experience intelligible by applying concepts and categories. Is that all of it? Yeah. Ken's in this series of having to take these tests to be certified to fix a certain type of anything that has a certain type of coolant in it, like a freezer, or like in a lot of these places where they have wine chillers. Chillers have a whole other science to them than freezers, and there's a lot you have to know about. I mean, he just passed a test and got certified, and you got another one coming up. I've gotten lost. He keeps explaining to me, and I get lost in it because it's like going to MIT to learn this stuff. I mean, you have to know all kind of stuff about EPA regulations and what could happen to somebody, how it could affect their health. You have to know because you're liable for these things if you fix this stuff. And it's like you just think, well, just learn how to fix it. It's so complicated. And I'm trying to stay interested in it, but I have so little understanding of what he's talking about that I just have to go, well, did you pass your test? Yeah, okay, I can understand that. You know, over the years, I think I've known all kind of people in the church, whatever. I never did know what they did because I didn't understand it. Like, I understand doctor, lawyer, firefighter, cop. But most people work such specialized things. When they tell me what they do, I look at them blankly because I don't want to, I just don't want to look like a moron. So I'm like, oh, well, that sounds very interesting. And I have no understanding of what you're talking about. You have to have language. I remember years ago, I was preaching one of the incarnations of buildings that we were in, and I kept referring, I would say, well, in the Amplified Bible, it says whatever. So this man, every Sunday, he would ask me, what are you talking about, the Amplified Bible? I said, it's a translation called the, and he could not get the concept. Like, he said, well, are there amplifiers that you hook up to? I said, no, it's like, it means the language is amplified. We went through it for weeks. So finally, I said, wait right here. Stand right there. I went to my office. I got one. I said, this is what I'm talking about. It's a, see, I know all about translations of the scriptures. You can ask me, why do you like this and why? That's my world. I know that. But there's other worlds I have no understanding of whatsoever. And generally, don't be insulted by this, I'm not that interested for you to really explain it to me, like, in detail. So that's one reason. I don't mean to insult you, but I mean, I'm just, if I'm not really, really interested, I'm probably not going to say, wait a minute, can you draw me a diagram? I just want to know, did you pass the test? And can you fix it? Now, in the 5 years that I've known Ken, I've said, there's something going on with the garbage disposal or with this or with the air conditioner or whatever. And he'll go do some stuff, and then it starts running. And I go, oh, wow, thank you. And he said, well, I don't know that I fixed it. I said, well, let me explain something. It wasn't working. Then you went, did some stuff, and now it's working. That's my definition of fixing it. Because I know, Lord, I know I couldn't do it. There's a few things I fixed that I just had to. Like, I remember one time we had the big building. It was on a Wednesday afternoon. We used to have this golden retriever, and he got out. And he was a sweet dog, but he was just in everybody's stuff. And so the neighbor was calling me. He said, you've got to come get this dog. And, I mean, it's like an hour and a half before church. And I thought, shoot. And I couldn't, I had no place to pin him up in the house. If I'd left him in the house, he would have destroyed everything. I thought, I've got to get him in that pen. I don't know what. So, I mean, you cannot believe how fast I drove to Home Depot. And I'm like, what do I get? I'm just like going down the aisles, grabbing stuff, go get, I don't know how I did it, but I fixed that pen. And the whole time I'm like, shoot, church is in 45 minutes. And I'm out there in, you know, ankle deep in mud and all kind of stuff. Finally go chase him around, get him corralled in there, put him back in, jumped in the shower. And 20 minutes later, I was preaching. And I thought, if I have to, I can get it done. But I'd rather call you so I don't have to break a sweat. That's just me. But anyway, the point is, David said, I do not exercise myself. I'm sorry, I'm just remembering something funny about this. I don't exercise myself in matters too weighty for myself. No, I'm laughing because there's no way they would ever trace this. We used to have the CPA that we used to use out of Tulsa. Real sweet guy, kind of a country guy, but good CPA. And he and I were talking about something. There was some pastor up north. You may know who Dave DeMola is. I never knew. We just knew a lot of the same people. So while he's doing my tax stuff, I said, well, I'm glad to pay you to do it because this isn't my area of expertise. I said, it's like when David said, I do not exercise myself in matters too weighty for me. And he goes, you mean Dave DeMola? I said, no, it's DeMola and it's David in the Bible. It was like kind of an awkward moment. I went trying to pray. I mean, the guy worked for churches. I just assumed he would know that was a scripture. And I was trying not to laugh. He said, you, I said, no, I don't usually quote Pastor DeMola. It's just, never mind. Just send me the bill. But if it's not your area of expertise, you don't know. And furthermore, I don't think you can or are supposed to understand everything about the world. And some things are supposed to be mysterious. Some things are supposed to be a mystery unfolding. But I do believe you should understand what's going on with you if you're going to navigate your life. So I've broken this up into three categories. The first one is understanding yourself. Oh, understanding yourself. This is the great Lao Tzu. I like this quote. He says, "Knowing others is wisdom. Knowing yourself is enlightenment." Now, let me tell you, I don't mean for this to be a teaching about aging, but if I were teaching a seminar on how to age properly, because it's inevitable, you're going to age. So you've got to figure out, how do I keep my mind in sync with the rhythms of nature to where aging becomes a positive for me? Because I can't stop the aging process. I can't stop the world from turning. But I can be proactive. I told you that's part of the reason I started the whole studio thing was born out of the fact that I thought one day, I'm like, I'm going to be 60 next year. And I started getting, not depressed, but I kind of got bummed out about it. I just did. I know some of you that are past it, you're like, it's not that big a deal. But when you're not there yet, you know what I mean. 40 is like, woohoo, 40. And then 50, you're like, woohoo, 50. And then at 60, you're like, seriously? When does it ever stop? Especially because in my mind, 60 is like, that's Mr. Wilson that lives next door to Dennis the Menace. You know, like, you got to invent what's the new 60. Because I can't be that. I gotta come up with another definition of it. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to start painting again. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to spend this year building a body of work. And on my 60th birthday, I'm going to have a big retrospective. And it'll be symbolic of, you know, the art represents my life. And then I got real excited about it. It's interesting how it even, that day I hadn't been feeling that good. Immediately I got healed just by changing that thought. It gave me something to look forward to and to think of it in a, just a different way. So if I were talking about the way to age properly, the good thing, one of the best things about aging is you finally learn who you are and who you're not, what you like, what you don't like. You, as you get older, ideally, you should be less manipulated by peer pressure, because, you know, that's what happens to kids. When kids don't know who they are, they just adopt whatever the culture is around them. Right. And it's fine. And you're like you finally get to a place where if somebody asks you to do something, I saw what you posted about the word no as a sentence. If somebody asks you to do something, you just know you're not being insulting. You're just like, no, I don't want to do that. And there's no point in trying to convince. I just know. I've lived long enough to know. It's not that I'm not open to new adventures, but they're going to have to be somewhere in line with the kind of adventures I already know that I like. And I might not have known that 20 years ago. So that's the good thing about finally knowing yourself, knowing even what your limitations are. You know, that's one of the best things about the relationships in your life is you do have people who are stronger in areas in which you are weak, and that's fine. It's like, oh, that's why this person's in my life, because they balance me out in this area. I don't have to have understanding of all of it, because they've got understanding in areas where I can rely on their strength. The scripture says two are better than one. So, and that's not just true about marriage. That's just true about every relationship that you're in. There's always somebody who's there for you, or there should be. Well, no, I believe there is somebody there for you. You just have to open up your eyes. The person that you need already exists in your life, or if not, they just haven't manifested yet, but they're on the way. So understanding yourself is actually a positive. It's like, oh, well, I know things about myself. Like, I remember, if you're a golfer, do not be insulted that I say this. But people have tried to get me to golf for years, especially back when I was doing a lot of preacher stuff. When you go to ministers' conferences, that's all they do. Like, everybody, they go to a conference and they golf for the rest of the afternoon. So when they're all going golfing and they say, do you want to golf? And you go, no, I don't golf. They look at you like, it's like you said, no, I'm a serial killer. I mean, it's like, that's, they're like, you don't, like, they can't even comprehend it. Like, what do you mean you don't golf? We're preachers. This is what we do. And I'm like, no, I get it. And, you know, for years, people bought me clubs twice, bought me lessons with a pro, which I took a few, and okay. And, you know, I'm trying to make everybody happy. And then, you know, the guys from church that I used to hang out with, they were going through a golf phase. So they just, you know, got me into it. And I thought, well, all right, I love these guys. It gives me time to, you know. And I went out there and I golfed, and I was about as good as they were. I mean, I was in their league. It wasn't like I was embarrassing. I mean, I could get it to the green about in the matter of strokes they could. So I'm like, I'm kind of on a par with y'all. And I'm amazed. I respect it as a sport. I get why people do it. When I go out and stay with Ken when he's on call, how many golf courses do they have at Reynolds? Six? A lot. It's that whole community kind of revolves around golfing, which is great. I think it's especially for, you know, people after a certain age, it's a great incentive to get them to walk. So I'm not anti-golf at all. I'm just saying for me, there was just one day we were on the ninth hole, and I thought, I can't do this anymore. And I said, guys, can I tell y'all something? They said, what? I said, I can't golf. They said, you're really kind of good. I said, I know, but I hate it. And I love y'all, and I love that you want to hang out with me, and I'll meet you later. I don't know. They said, you're not even going to finish the game. I said, this is my club. Don't hate me. I just can't. I don't like it. I could do it. My whole life, people have, I don't know if they're trying to butch me up or whatever, but people have drugged me out in woods, you name it. And everything they've asked me to do, I've done it. People took me water skiing. I got it. Got out the first time. I'm skiing. I'm like, yep, I can do it. Horseback riding, did it. Canoeing, did it. I've slept in hammocks in third world nations on the mission field. I can do it. Just don't necessarily want to do it. And that's the point. That's the point. It's like, I know I've told you all these things before, but you know, when Klesko used to be at the church, he'd take me hunting, and first time I went out, I killed a 300-pound boar. Its head is in Jared's house right now. I did it, and then he's like, oh, wow, I found my new hunting buddy, and we're going to go, next month we're going to go to Maine and shoot moose. And I'm like, moose? Really? I mean, a pig was one thing, but a moose? No. You know, I'm trying to, I love that you're in my life, but, and then he was playing a game in New York and flew me up there, and I took him to a Broadway show, and I'm like this, looking at it, I look over, and he's like, and I thought, you know, you are who you are. You're not going to, I think it's great that we had this little intersection of our realities, but you ain't ever going to get turned, you don't understand it. If you don't like Broadway, you're going to be like, why the heck would you pay this for this ticket? You're like, because it's a Broadway show. You're in a Broadway theater. Do you know who that is on the stage? Look at this. There's an orchestra. And there's a, you know, but if that's not your thing. So an understanding of yourself is not closing yourself off from other people and not even having a judgment about what they want to do. If that's what they want to do, then fine. I was thinking about Jared right now, because Jared's going through a little thing right now with a thing that happened, and he's getting some bad press for it, and it is what it is. He had a party at his house, and he asked someone to leave because they were being disruptive, and now they've read more into why he asked them to leave, and it, you know, it's just, I haven't even read the stuff, because I'm like, it's the same old crap that people write about stuff, it's whatever. But I thought, you know, for whatever he is, Jared found his own life. I mean, he created a world for himself. There's parts of it that have been troubling to me over the years, and I've been vocal about that. But he's never asked me for money. He's found his own way. He's traveled around the world. And I remember when he was growing up, I remember one day I was going to pick him up. His mom lived in Dunwoody. And I would get Jared and Christina 3 days a week, and I was going to pick him up one day, and I see, it's a very Jewish community there where their house was. And I see these two little boys walking to temple, and they both have yarmulkes on. And one of them, one little blonde boy, I thought, God, the kid looks like Jared. And it was him. He was going with his friend Max to temple, and he had a yarmulke on. And he went through a little phase where he was kind of a little Jewish kid. And then he went through a hip-hop phase where we had to buy all of his clothes at South DeKalb Mall, and he was going to be a rapper. And, you know, everything was gangsta and whatever. And I watched him go through all of these things until he figured out, oh, this is who I am. And all of these other things are a part of my consciousness, and they influence me or whatever. But now I understand this is who I am. And I don't need you to approve of it or disapprove of it. It's just, you know, I respect him just for the sheer longevity of him doing it. I mean, he's been doing this for his entire adult life. I mean, they started the band when he was in high school, and he is about to turn 35, is that right? So, I mean, he's been at it for a while, so I have to figure, well, this is who you are. One of the reality shows that interviewed me, they were trying to find the pitch for the show, and at that time, Jonah was living with Jared at his house in Cabbage Town. And I could tell they were feeling for where's the story here, because a story is supposed to be built somewhere on conflict. And they said, does it bother you that Jonah lives in the house with Jared and that he's being exposed to the rock and roll lifestyle? And whatever. And I was like, no. I mean, I didn't want to laugh, but I thought, no, that we don't even think like that. I mean, that's just, you know, it is what it is. That's who they are. Besides which, he would know. He would be influenced by him whether he lived with him or not. It's just funny how people think about your life that have no concept of who you are. As a matter of fact, I don't know what will come of this, and I haven't even said anything about it because at this point it's laughable because this is the 14th one. But I was interviewed week before last for another show. They came to my studio. They've already interviewed all the kids, and this one they want to build around my relationship with my kids. And I'm like, okay, sure, we'll talk. He said, but the one thing he did say is, he said, I don't want to tell y'all what to do. We just love the dynamic of how you are all together. He said, there is something that we consider the swilly factor, and he said, you and your kids all have it, and we'd like to just build a show around you and let it become whatever it becomes. I said, well, fair enough, because when I did some of, like when I was on some of the episodes that when Judah did his, when you do a reality show, and I understand why they do this, you're not yourself, you're playing yourself. It's like, it's yes, it is you, but they set up things they want to happen, and I understand why they have to do it. It's so expensive to, you can't just arbitrarily follow somebody around with a camera 24 hours waiting to see if they're going to do or say something interesting. Plus, any public place you go, you have to get clearance for, you've got to make sure that everything on the wall isn't copywritten or you have to cover. I mean, it's like there's a whole thing to it. I learned a lot just from what I did with him. So I get it. But like one of the episodes, they wanted me to meet with my kids and talk to them about why they weren't in church, that I was like concerned for their souls. And I said, I'm not going to say that. I would never say that. And they said, I know, but we're trying to build the story. I said, no, I can't. I'm not that good an actor. I said, most of them are on the road all the time anyway, and they do come to my church whenever they feel like it, but I would never, that's a conversation I would never have, and I'm just not going to say it. And they got upset with me. They said, you're being difficult. I said, no, if you give me something that I might actually say, I'll work with you on it. I get it. I understand what you're trying to do, but I'm not going to say something that's just out of character with the dynamic I have with my kids. I would never even, that's not even a vernacular. If the people in my church saw me say that, they would immediately call me on it. Like, that's not what you really believe. So you have to, sometimes, you know, when you have an understanding of who you are, you have to fight for clarity. Like, no, you understand this is not what I would do. I used to, even when we were building over the years, if I ever hired a company, and we did, we, you know, back in the day when you were growing, you hired branding companies. This one company came in, it's ridiculous what we paid them, but this is what we were told you were supposed to do. And they brainstorm with you, and they said, well, what's your message? And I said, well, I don't know, we're like real people experiencing the real God in the real world. They're like, oh my God, that's brilliant, that's it. And I want to go, well, why am I paying you all this money? Because I just said my thing. And I didn't, you know, I used to get talked into a lot of stuff that I didn't really believe in. And as I was writing the check, I thought, y'all should write this check to me. I came up with that. not y'all, because y'all don't know who I am. I know who I am. I'm going to brand something. But for people that don't know who they are, they do need that. They need image consultants and all that kind of stuff. I think the best you're going to do is play to what your strengths are. And until you've done some things, until you've got talked into some things that you just could not wait for it to get over with, then you finally say, I'm not going to do that again, because I know that's just not me, and I'm not. It's like, even, I think I've mentioned this before, but you know, they've got this one reality show where somebody's friends go to these fashion experts. It's called What Not to Wear. And like, if your friends don't like that you're dressing like a skank or something, they'll go and they bring these people in to tell you how to dress better. And you can tell these women hate this. Like, they come walking out in some business suit and they're like, I would never wear this. And I always want to say, however you dress, you need to get some new friends. Because that's not who you are. I mean, yeah, we can all pick up some tips or whatever, but if that's how you want to dress, then that's how you should dress. Nobody should tell you. Now, if you're working for someone and they say, we would like you to have this kind of dress code, that's fine, because you're on their turf. But if it's just your life, believe me, I have this ethical dilemma every time I go shopping, because I'm always drawn to things that are designed for 25, 30-year-old men. And, you know, and I do end up shopping there sometimes, because when I go to the apartments designed for 59-year-old men, I'm like, I just don't think I can do it. And, there, you know, there'll be some guy putting, he said, now this looks really good with this. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Maybe on you. Now, I don't want to look ridiculous. I just want to be just like, wow, you just kept it right under ridiculous. You know what I mean? But to me, if I feel good in it, my mom's had this for years, because, you know, the churches my dad would pastor, they had a way that they thought their pastor's wife should look. She didn't look like them. She just didn't. I mean, bless her heart, I used to see her in all these, everything from the Ladies' Will and Worker Band to Women's Aglow to whatever. And you could just see, like, one of these things is not like the other. You know, like, and it was hard for her. And she had a lot of problems with people over the years, because they would say, not that she was dressed immodestly, but some people thought, well, you're a preacher's wife, you shouldn't look glamorous, or you shouldn't have blonde hair or whatever. And it was every church my dad ever pastored, it was always an issue somewhere. Till he would finally say, look, this is my wife, I like the way she looks. If there's an issue, we'll talk about it. We don't need, those church people are control freaks. They don't want you to be like Jesus. They want you to be like how they think they should be like Jesus. It's like, you fit into our mold as we follow Jesus. I've told you this before, but the word cornerstone, with Jesus as the cornerstone, it's a word that stonemasons used to use, called a coping stone. And this is back before they had machines that cut rock. They had to be hand hewn. And so what you would have to do is you'd have a model that every rock was cut to the specifications of that one. Because if you did a copy of a copy, and then a copy of a copy, and a copy of a copy, you, after a while, it's going to mutate. You won't have your original specifications. So when Jesus said, I'm the cornerstone, he's basically saying, you be like me, and however that manifests in your personality is fine. Don't try to be like somebody else being like me, because you're going to end up being a copy of the copy. God didn't have any grandchildren. He has children. So, you know, that's one thing. And I think the church world as a whole is probably doing better than they used to. For one thing, I think they see people like me, people like people who have done their own thing, who just are still okay and haven't been struck by lightning, and, you know, seem to still be blessed and prosperous. And they're like, oh, well, maybe we should just let people be who they are. Exactly. Somebody inboxed me yesterday because their daughter, who has recently come out, is just getting all this flack from her church. And we need to be armed with the right scriptures and everything. I said, well, here's the thing. I said, get my book because it covers all of that. But really, you're just wasting your time because you're just going to argue and argue and argue. And even after you make your point, let me tell you what's going to happen. They're going to say, well, I see what you're saying in the scriptures, but I still think, well, you just wasted a lot of time. It's just a waste of time. And I said, it's fine. Get the book. Maybe it'll help you. She texted me this morning. Can she contact you directly? I said, that's fine. But I'm just telling you, you're wasting your time going into a church setting trying to get them to see things that if they're going to see, they're only going to see by revelation. And all that's going to happen is when you go in and declare your truth, it's going to make them double down for what they think is their truth. If you don't believe it, look how polarized our political system is right now. Nobody's hearing anybody. And all that happens is we just get more and more and more polarized. The second thing is understanding, this is a quote by Jung, is understanding your relationships. And he says, I have ambivalence about this one because I think it probably is true, but I don't like that it's true. It says, everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves. Have you ever had somebody say something to you, like they have a problem with you that's exactly your problem with them? You're like, what? What? Hello, pot. I'm the kettle. You're black. You know, like, what? That's what I was going to say to you. Like, I've had people say to me, you're so self-absorbed. I'm like, really? Coming from the most self-absorbed person I've ever met? You think if I'm self-absorbed, baby, you're on a whole other plane of self-absorption. But it's funny how people see things that is clearly not your reality. You know, I had a thing happen last summer, and it's kind of, I don't know how it's all going to play out, but it kind of has affected my relationship with TFAM, and I understand it. I was in a setting last year, and I didn't understand it so much at the time it happened. Now I've got some distance and some retrospect, understanding that not everybody in that room knew me. I do take, because I've pastored a multicultural church my entire ministry, I do take some liberties in saying some things that I think I can say because everybody here knows me. You know my track record. I realize if there's somebody, like, let me tell you what happened. There was a man addressing this group that was not just bishops, it was some other leadership. There was everybody there was African American except me, maybe one other person, and the man who was teaching it was white. And he goes into these settings and teaches white people about how to recognize racism that you don't think you're racist, but you actually are. So, okay, fine, I'm open to that. But he starts with how his dad taught him the N-word, and they always use the N-word. And he just kept going on and on and on. Until I finally said, when it was time to speak, I said, can I just say something? I said, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but can I just say that was not every white person's experience. Can I at least put this in the record that I never heard the N-word in my life? My dad would have taken a belt to me if I'd said it. So before we just establish that that's every white person's experience, no, it's not. But I can tell the people who heard me, because they don't know me, they heard it differently than what I intended. You know how like when somebody says something, well, I can say this because I got black friends. I'm not a racist. And you're like, no, you can't. There's some things, white people, you can't ever talk about the N-word. It's like you just don't even get in the conversation because there's no way, you just can't. And don't mention Hitler. If you ever mention Hitler, it's always going to go badly. You can never use Hitler for any kind of, it's just never, as Sean Spicer just learned the other day again, like, how do you not know this? How many careers have bit the dust over the H-man? So anyway, I was trying to explain to everyone, like, no, that's not what I meant. I'm just saying, I agree with what you're saying. I said, but honestly, I swear to God, if there's anything racist in me, I'm so unaware of it because I've never consciously had a racist thought. Now, if you can unearth something in me that I'm unaware of, okay, so be it. But I'm telling you, I mean, as God is my witness, as I got old enough to understand racism, I didn't even get it. I was like, I don't understand what the problem is. Because I met people who were different from me, and I'm just like, oh, okay, fine. If anything, I was nearly drawn to people who were different from me because I was, oh, well, you have a different perspective on life than I do. Never occurred to me that I'm better than you or whatever. I mean, I had to like, oh, that's what people think? Like, why? Because it just was not, it wasn't taught me. It's not innate. You know, like you, any racism, you have to learn it. You don't know it. I remember we used to have a kindergarten when I worked for my dad over here, and I went to K-4 one day because somebody had come in there looking for me, and the students were telling me, somebody's looking for you. I said, who was it? It's a man. I said, well, what'd he look like? And I said, was he a black man or a white man? And every student, and this is a multicultural, they all looked at me like, what are you talking about? Like, they had no language for that. And I thought, wow, y'all don't even know. You're not even old enough now to understand that people look different and that some people have issues with that. Like, wow, that's kind of a beautiful place to be because you don't even know that yet. I used to have somebody that came to the church that told me, African-American woman who told me that one of her daughters came in when she was, I don't know, 5 or 6. And she says, Mom, so-and-so next door said that we're black. She says, we're not black, are we? And she says, well, because she was thinking black, because that's not black. I mean, nobody's, you know, but to try to explain to somebody, well, that's the word that somebody uses. Anyway, the point is, as I tried to explain myself, and this woman spoke to me, this woman happened to be white, she was projecting something on me. I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. And she said, do not bring your male patriarchal things in here and shut me up just because I'm a woman. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm... And so suddenly, I'm a racist misogynist, and I'm like, you people have no idea who I am. What? And I could tell that it was just spiraling downward, like, you know, this guy hates black people and he hates women. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm looking at Bishop Flunder like, please rescue me because this is not what I'm saying at all. And it just went badly. I walked out. Ken was by the pool. He said, is your meeting over? I said, it is now. Our vacation just began. And then, of course, you know, I heard from Bishop and we all texted and everybody's good. But as I got away from it, I thought, you know what? There's until somebody knows you, there's some conversations you just can't have because they're not hearing you. They're hearing the voice of everybody else who looks like you, who has said something. They don't hear you. So there's no point in trying to explain yourself because all you do is end up digging a hole and either shut up and listen to the guy say that all white people are racist and find what you can agree with, or get up and leave. But you're not going to be able to argue this point because people have been through too much stuff. And you can't, right, it is polarizing. It definitely is. And I'm not mad at anybody. I understand it. It was like, you know what, lesson learned. Because I'm so used to, most of the crowds I'm talking to, I have a microphone. And I have to assume, pretty much those of you who are with me at this point, you've kind of heard me say everything. Even if you didn't fully agree with it, you're like, well, you know, that's my pastor. He is what he is. Did you like what he said? No. You go back next Sunday? Yeah. Where else would we go? He has the words of life. So, but I realized these people don't know this. They just see as some guy that's sitting here who thinks he's not racist but probably is.
It was that woman that caused confusion.
Believe me, I was tempted to say, Bible says, rebuke not an elder, and I suffer not a woman to teach. Woman should keep silent in the church. Your head should be covered anyway. It was uncalled for. It was uncalled for because I wasn't. I mean, I got women in here. Do any of you women think I would tell a woman to shut up? No, that's not even in my. It's not even. I've always liked strong women. I've never. You know what I mean? It's like I'm not. Like, what are you talking about? But. It was a learning moment for me. And it's interesting because one of the people that spoke up said, this should be a learning moment for this guy. Like, they weren't talking to me at a point. They were talking about me. Like, this should be a learning. And you know what? As it turned out, it was a learning point. Not the way that they thought. because I didn't see the error of my ways. I'm like, baby, if you think I'm racist, you need to come up with another definition for it, because I'm not what you're called. I am. There's nothing in me that even relates to that. But it was a learning point, a moment for me. There's a time to speak. There's a time to be silent. There's a time that you don't have to have an opinion about every flipping thing that comes along. Sometimes you can, so here's a thought. Sometimes you can look at something on social media that you disagree with, and you don't have to have an opinion about it. You can just say, oh, this is not my discussion, and you can scroll down. And furthermore, unless somebody said, specifically, what do you think about this? It kind of doesn't really matter what you thought about it. I mean, there's some of the friends I have, some that I've never met. And I'm not just talking about political stuff. I'm just talking about the way they talk. I can look at their page. Like there's a young man from New York that follows me, likes on everything that I post, always could not be more polite. Sweet Jesus in the morning. When I look at his page, the language he uses, the stuff he says, I'm like, oh, my God. And I think, well, how are my friends with it? Well, he doesn't bring it to my page. For me, he's very respectful. So if you don't start nothing, ain't going to be nothing. So we have somehow struck a way that I can, you know, everything I put, anytime I post for, I just post something for Metron, he's the first one to like on it. First one, you know, and respectful and whatever. I go to his page, I'm like, oh, I got to get up off of here. Oh, my eyes. But my thing is like, well, okay, if that's your territory, then fine. You say your stuff, as long as you don't put it on my page and stink up the place. I don't have any apology. I'll make any apology of deleting a comment or blocking somebody who just puts energy on my page that I don't want, because I'm not asking for it. I'm not putting out controversial stuff. I'm not saying, anybody want to fight? I don't want to fight. Baby, I've been in fights for a long time. One day this week, Skip that runs Paris, somebody was asking about a wedding, and he came in and he said, you're ordained, aren't you? And I said, yes, I was ordained before you were born. He said, well, I don't really understand what that word means. I said, well, what do you say? I'm not legit. Do you have a business license? I certainly am ordained. I've been ordained with several organizations, as a matter of fact. I got multiple ordinations. Pick one. But that wasn't language that he used, so he didn't really have understanding of it. All right. Understanding your relationships. Everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of something about ourselves. Wow. I reluctantly agree with this. Because even if there's somebody that just continually ticks you off, you have to at least understand, why does this person bother me so much? Why is this happening? What in me? And I'm not saying you aren't justified. Sometimes you're justified. Amos 3:3, how can two walk together lest they be agreed? You do reach apart with some, like the song, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy, there's only you and me, and we just disagree. Yeah, you can sometimes realize we're not... This thing is not going to be fixed. We're going to have to peacefully move in separate directions. And it's okay. But then you also have to find out what is happening here. Where is the irritation coming from? And that's how you know you've really grown up, when you're able to put your own self under a microscope. Why do I feel this way? Why is this affecting me this way? Because usually you're... First reaction to something is not what's really going on. It's usually symptomatic of a deeper thing. Have you ever had somebody, like in traffic, just go off on you, like with road rage, and you're like, wow, that was really over the top for what just happened. I don't think this is about me. I think you're on the edge, and you need to pull over or calm down or something, because what just happened here was not... Like, you really overreacted. I think you're reacting to something else. This isn't about me. I hate to bring the room down with it, but the horrible thing about that Facebook killer that just arbitrarily killed that old man, is he's trying to prove some point to some woman. And you're like, wow, that's so wrong. Not that it would justify murder if there was a reason for it, but when something's just that stupid and arbitrary, you just want to say to everybody, get your stuff fixed. Because if you don't, you end up, God forbid it go to that extreme, but you might not take a gun to somebody, but you might just completely go off on them in a way that's unnecessary. I don't really, my life is so transparent now that this is pretty much a non-issue, but I remember there was a time in my life where if I had anger about something, I would push it down, and then something would happen. I was never a rager or anything, but I would just have enough of a reaction that I would think, why, that was uncalled for. Like, why, if every action has an equal and opposite reaction, this wasn't really opposite. This came in. This is, I don't know if you saw me post about it, this was very interesting. Was it this week? I picked up, there's a painting that I did years ago that was given away without me knowing it, and I wanted to see if I could buy it back from the people because I wanted it in my gallery. Well, come to find out, they had given it away. So Avery, being the super sleuth that she is, she tracked it down and actually went to the person's house and picked it up. Like, Avery, oh, Jesus. That's that military upbringing. Anyway, the person doesn't want to give it up, but they did allow us to take it and make digital copies of it, so fine. So I went and picked it up this week, and I put it on my wall. I was just taking some pictures of it, and this woman just walked into my studio, and she goes, oh, my God, that's an amazing picture. So I told her what happened with it, and I can't quote to you what she's everything that she said. She was prophesying. She didn't realize she was prophesying because usually you don't hear the F-bomb dropped that many times in a prophecy. Because it started with, you tell that person that doesn't want to give this painting back that you're going to be so, well, whatever about that. Well, then she starts prophesying over everything. She says, my God, the energy. She says, my father was an artist. She says, the energy that I feel in this room. And then she starts going from painting to painting. And she said, you were in a lot of pain when you painted that one. And I was. And, I mean, it really, I got chills now just thinking about it. She goes into this mode where she's analyzing all my paintings. She stopped at the one with the angel that I have. She says, I want you to notice the pathos in his eyes. She said, I don't know how you captured it, but I see compassion and I see this. And she says, you don't even realize. And so I'm like, thanks. She says, no, you don't even realize what's about to happen to you. I said, thank you. She says, no, I don't even think you understand. This painting over here is going to be, it's not going to matter. She says, you actually did this years ago, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. She said, because this is one of your more recent ones. And I said, yes, it is. She says, because you're in such a better place now. I said, wow, that you are tripping me out that you're reading all of this. And then she said her stuff, and then she split. But I thought, wow, that was really an awesome teachable moment. That was worth everything I just went through with that painting to get that. So it's not just understanding yourself, it's understanding your relationship with others. And then finally, the great Marie Curie, that was the famous scientist, what she discovered, radium, I think, right? She says, this is about understanding your life. She says, nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less. I completely agree with that. Have you ever talked to somebody, especially somebody that's lived a good long life, and they're not afraid of death, and they're ready to go, and they're just at peace. They're not fighting or anything. They're just like, no, I'm ready to go, and whatever. And it's understanding that if you're not ready for it, it's not a good thing. But if you are ready, death's not really death. It's just a transition to another dimension. And it doesn't really end things. And until you've been through a death experience with somebody, you don't really see that so much. I talked about it last week about how that resurrection changes you. The butterfly can't go back and hang out with the caterpillars because it's just impossible. think about, like in this room, some of the things that you've all been through. Some of you have been through divorces. You've been through painful experiences. You've been through things with your parents. You've been through things with your children or whatever. As you have gained understanding, didn't it kind of bring some equilibrium into your life when you say, wow, that was painful, but I understand it? I can look back now at some of the way I've handled relationships in and out of my life, and I think, you know, I could have handled that better, and I understand why that person saw it the way that they did. Now, I did post this week, and clearly people took me seriously from the size of my crowd today. But I was saying, I respect people's liberty. As much as I would like for you all to be, please, those of you here, I don't want you to go, he said he didn't care. That's not what I said. I love the faithful ones. But also, this is why it used to be laughable to me when, if anybody ever called me a cult leader, I don't think you understand what a cult leader is. I'm so the opposite of that. A cult leader runs your life and harasses you and follows you. And I'm like, I'm just like, bye. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, because I believe in people having space. If you say, I need some quiet time, I get it. I've needed quiet time before too and didn't want to have to explain it. You say, I got to go off Facebook for a while. I got it. There have been some times I'm just like, ugh, I cannot look at this stuff for a while. And then other days, you know, some days you see there's a flood of, why are you posting all that stuff? I don't know. I felt a wave come through, and these are thoughts that are coming through my head. And I just start, I don't overthink them. I just kind of post them. And people are like, oh, my God, that's exactly what I needed to hear. You saved my life, whatever. I'm like, well, okay, good. There was no agenda to it, and I might not post for a couple of days again. But that's where the wave was, whatever. But to understand that nothing needs to be feared. Wow. Like, if you can make me understand what's about to happen. This is one reason I think maybe it surprises people that I'm as candid as I. Like, if you tell me you were with, like, you had a loved one that died, I'll usually ask you, like, what was it like? Were you with them at the end? What did they say? Whatever. And some people, oh, you shouldn't ask that. Well, no. I mean, death is a real experience. I mean, I've seen people go through it. I'm genuinely curious, not in a nosy kind of way, but, well, what happened? What was the final thing? I mean, the first night Ken and I met, he told me about taking care of his mom, and I asked him everything about what was it like? Were you, I mean, I asked him very personal things. Like, I don't know how you did that. I don't think I could do that for my mom. I mean, I don't know. And immediately I started falling in love with him that night because I started understanding what a really good man he is. Like, wow, that's, you don't find people like that around. Like, this is really a God thing for me to have come out at my age and meet somebody of this caliber. Like, this is awesome. You know, people say, What do gay people do on the first date? You want to know? I sat on the floor while he sat on the couch and told me about his mom dying, and I cried. That was our gay first date. That's an abomination. Whatever. And I asked him everything, like, well, what happened at the end? I mean, was she coherent? Did she talk? But he went step by step, told me what happened. It didn't bring the room down. I mean, it was very serious, but it was like, well, I'm not afraid of it. Because I want to understand it. I want to understand what's that like. Some of y'all have lost parents, and I am curious because I know I will be in that position one day. So I usually will ask, well, what does that feel like? How do you get through that first Mother's Day or that first birthday or whatever? I'm not trying to freak you out. I'm genuinely interested. How does that happen? Like, how do you cope with that? Because when people have been through things that you haven't been through yet, you want to know, well, you clearly got to the other side of it. How'd you do it? That's why, did you see me post the other day? I was waiting for my car to be fixed. I mentioned this already. Sitting at a McDonald's over there in East Atlanta. I'm just online, you know, eating whatever McDonald's serves for breakfast. I can't tell you, people just walked over to my table. They didn't ask for anything. I was already prepared for them asking for money. Nobody asked for one thing. They just came up and started telling me about their lives. just randomly. Hey, you're not going to believe what just happened with my daughter today. And I'm like, you're not going to be. And people just wanted to talk to me. And one guy, no introduction, no hello, no goodbye. He just walks over and tells me this joke, corny joke, but it was a joke. He, for some reason, wanted to share it with me. And I thought, I don't know what vibe I'm sending out, but people clearly want to talk to me. I can't tell you the strangers that I have walk up to me and just blurt out something like, oh, my God, I've never told that to anybody before. And I'm like, well, okay, well, you're good. And I think the more you understand life, the less you send out the vibe of being fearful. And people who are looking for the light recognize that. They want to see somebody else who isn't afraid. That's why even, I know I keep referring to what I posted, but you know, I'm watching the news this week, and I'm like, crap, I don't want to go to a nuclear war with North flipping Korea. And so I remembered, I think this is in 2009, I was a part of the Global Peace Festival in Seoul, South Korea. Largest, it wasn't for me, I mean, I was just one of the speakers, but it was the largest crowd I've ever addressed. They estimated around 70,000, and that was a modest, I mean, it was a sea of humanity as far as you could see. And when it was my turn, they wanted me to speak a little bit. They introduced me as he pastors the largest, fastest growing church in the United States. I'm like, wow, really? Okay. I didn't tell you to say that, but I could tell everybody's looking at me like, wow. And I'm like, I know, right? I had no idea. So you get up there and you're speaking with an interpreter. And what they wanted me to do was pray a prayer for unity. So I said, I didn't even have a plan. I just got up there and said, this is what I'd like you to do. And he's interpreted. And there's Buddhist monks everywhere. Thousands of Buddhist monks. You can see them because they wear these orange sheets around them. So you see these flecks of orange all through. Beautiful. Korean people are beautiful. I love Korean culture. And just very polite. Anything I asked them to do, they did it. I said, I'd like you all to stand. Interpreter tells them they all stand. Sea of people. I said, which way is north? And they told me, I said, so North Korea is that way, right? I said, would you please turn and face North Korea? So thousands of people turn. I said, would you please stretch your hands toward North Korea? Thousands of hands, as far as you can see. Look like miles of just people with hands. I said, let's pray for the peaceful reunification of North and South Korea, however that can happen. And here I am, leading a prayer through an interpreter for mostly Buddhist group, and they're praying. It looked like a Pentecostal camp meeting. I don't know what they were praying, but you could hear a roar of prayer coming up off of these thousands and thousands of people. Now, did it fix the situation? Not yet. I'm sure there are other people praying for it, but do you know, I watch the news, but you know why I don't get on the bandwagon and add my voice to people talking doom and gloom? Because I think my words are too powerful. You know what Christina said to me this week, which I think she's on to something? We were talking about what happened with I-20 last week after what happened with I-85. She said, do you think it's all the people talking about what happened on I-85 that made it happen on I-20? I said, I already thought it. I didn't say it because it sounds so out there. But I thought the exact same thing. So I say, the roads in my city are nicely built. They're beautiful. And I mean, I got potholes everywhere. I call those potholes that be as though they were not. But, you know, they have done some experiments. I got to shut up. They have done some experiments with power of intention where people, like there was one city I was reading about where they had a problem with the water, and they went in and they told everybody to start saying certain words over the water system, and it did fix it. And there was another place where another city where all the kids' scores were too low for whatever, like their SATs, PSATs, and they did this. It was a small enough community they could get everybody to sign on for it, and they started changing what they said about the kids, and everybody's scores went up. Now, things have to be reported. I'm not saying I don't want to know if something's actually going on. I think once you hear it, yes, I see it, but I wanted to post that picture of prayer for North Korea because that's what I'm focusing on. Is there stuff going on? Yes. So I'm reaching back in a memory because by the observer effect and my faith, I'm remembering a moment in time where maybe just a little thing I did might have had some kind of butterfly effect on the larger grand scheme of things and might make it better. So that's why I posted that. I did that for me. I don't want to look at pictures of Kim Jong-un. I want to look at pictures of thousands of people praying for peace and agree with that. I don't see them much anymore, but, you know, hippies used to ride around with bumper stickers on that said, visualize world peace. I love the way that resonates. Yes, I want to visualize world peace. I want to know what's going on, and I want to visualize world peace. Let's wrap this up. This is Psalm 19:12 in the Amplified Bible. I love this. I actually love this verse. David says, who can discern his lapses and errors? Cleanse me from hidden and unconscious faults. In the King James, it says, who can understand his errors? Keep back thy servant from presumptuous sins and cleanse me from secret faults. Basically, he's saying, who can understand what makes him tick? So ask yourself, why am I like this? Should everybody go to a therapist? No, but some people should. Should everybody go to a life coach? No, but some people should. That's what Doc does. Doc's a full-time bona fide life coach where you have to go to an office and you... Not a pastor. Pastors, you get it for free. Life coach, you pay. And they probably take your advice a lot better than if you were a pastor, because you've pastored before. That's why I'm looking into life coaching. People want to meet with me, you can't afford me. No, he's not. I'm just saying, is that what you need? Probably sometime or another, everybody needs some external help. Where you're like, I don't know, I need some help with my life. I haven't had this, my relationship with my dad has been a tricky one our whole life. But there have been several occasions when I really needed him to be there for me that I went and talked to him in a certain way, and he was. Anytime I made that specific demand, he would rise to the occasion. Including starting this. Remember that day when I was so messed up? There was one night we were trying to decide where to eat, and I pulled over to the side of the road, and I'm crying because I can't think where to go eat. I thought, man, I need some help. I'm like on the edge of a breakdown because just deciding where to go eat is pushing me over the edge. And, I was basically staying in Covington to give the staff a job. That's basically... And I felt so obligation to people that had moved up, whatever. But my heart was just not there anymore. And, I usually do the right thing. And I thought, I can't pull the plug. I'm still paying people. There's really no reason for them to even have this job anymore. But because they've been faithful to me, I'm selling stuff to keep paying them. They may not even realize it, but I did that for the years after I came out. And it was killing me, man. It was killing me. And I went to my dad. I said, I need you to prophesy over me because I don't know what to do. And I'm trying to do this. And if you make a demand, he would come through. And he said, you need to go do what you want to do and stop worrying about everybody else. They're going to be fine. And clearly they are. Not one of them's ever even come to to Metron. So clearly they figured it out. All that hand-wringing, what do we do if we can't hear your voice? Well, I've been preaching here for 3 years. The only person that worked for me for free was Avery. He's the only one that's... So there you have it. And I'm not saying that with sour grapes. I'm just saying, boy, I'm glad he told me the truth. Because I was thinking, how can they live without me? They can totally live without me. They're like, la, 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 what was his name? They don't even remember me. That's why when I woke up this morning, I was like, so grateful. I'm grateful that I have a place to go. I'm grateful that I have a place to preach. That I'm just doing what I want to do, not what people tell me, you should be doing this. No, you don't know. Listen, I believe in confirmation. I believe in asking for help when you get it, but when you need it. But at the end of the day, only you know what's right for you. Only you know what's right for you. And the best you're going to get if you go to a therapist or a life coach or someone prophesies over you, whatever, it should verify something that you already think. It should resonate with you like, well, I didn't want to believe that, but now that you've said that, yes. And sometimes you need somebody outside of you who is objective, who can say this is what you need to do, and you're like, oh, okay. Right. Right. Even if somebody prophesies something to you that it's not really what you want to do, in your heart of hearts, you know they're right. You're like, well, okay. It may take me a minute to get there, but I know you're right. And then finally, I always have to end with an Einstein quote. You know, they're making a movie. It's about to come out about him. It says, any fool can know, the point is to understand. Yes, Albert, you are right. Not just know, understand. Can I tell you this? I always knew about God. Now I believe I understand God. And that's a very different thing. So if you tell me your idea of God is different, I go, well, that's not really my understanding of who God is. I did one more thing. I did post this yesterday. I just noticed people say, I need prayer warriors to pray. And something about prayer warriors just strikes me as it's like nails on a chalkboard. And I said, if this initiates a Bible argument, I'm going to take this post down because I don't want to contend with you. And I'm not that passionate about the subject. I'm just thinking about it. Why do you say prayer warriors? I said, I understand spiritual warfare. I understand that whole piece. But prayer isn't a war. So at least wherever you are on the theological spectrum, at least define what it is that you're asking me for. Because if you ask me to pray with you, I don't think I'm going to war with you or for you. Because I've done that before. I've done that where you're praying really hard. Right, and it just does. I said, just think about it. And even some of the people they were putting there, I said, that's fine. Your opinions are fine, whatever. But just think about what it is, because I do believe every thought you think and every word you speak ultimately is prayer. I don't think if you go to a church service and somebody's like, "Our most gracious heavenly Father," I don't think that's necessarily prayer. That's a performance. Prayer is, what are you thinking about all the time? I got to shut up and go to Florida. My car's running. Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? Yes. We'll call all those people that didn't come and say, you blew it. I just speak a spirit of understanding over all of you. Over all of you. You know what? You all know what to do. Let's not run the end thing. If you have checks, Danny will be back there to receive it. If you have cash, there's several people with birthdays. Remember them. Go by and give them a little birthday blessing. And we get a fifth Sunday with Shonda Corelli next month. One more. And you know, the last one's always the best one. And then Judah's going to be with us here in May. And I think what we'll do for our outreach that month, I'd like to make that to his church too, since he's going to be there. We'll bless them and let that be a like kind of a bumper month for them. So that is all good, all right? You're blessed when you come in. You're blessed when you go out. You have a spirit of wisdom and understanding and counsel and might. Jesus has made into you wisdom, but he's also made into you understanding. You walk in the Spirit. You're tuned into Spirit. You're not afraid of anything because you understand things, that your path is opened up to you and that you walk in the light. You have a beautiful week, and you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace. Love you so much.